This is Power User Podcast, brought to you by neowin.net and wincustomize.com. I'm your host, Kristen Hatcher. This show is broken into three segments, and this week we'll look at the developer beta of Internet Explorer 7 and the official but not unexpected demise of OS 2. But first, in this segment, we'll be discussing the uproar surrounding Grand Theft Auto. Joining me today is regular contributor Brad Wardell of Stardock Corporation and Tom Chick, well-known video game reviewer. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, very you well, know, the you. Ulcers are acting up.
Nice.
That's great. We got Brad complaining about his ulcers.
Right,
already.
Right off the bat. Right. What's giving you ulcers, Brad?
Well, you know, I was thinking that I was looking at my children, and I noticed they both have two healthy kidneys each. And I had thought that if I was really banking on being able to take their, one kidney each, because I read online that if I had four kidneys, I could drink motor oil. Well, it turns out that is an urban legend, so I've been very stressed out because I'd already drank the motor oil in preparation.
Oh, I see. Well, you can't believe everything you read on the internet. That's just my tip to you today, Brad.
You know, yeah, but some things I've read on the internet lately are, I don't know, I hope they're true. In fact, they did turn out to be true.
Yeah?
Such as sex in video games.
Oh, I know it. Can you believe it? The Grand Theft Auto hot coffee mod. What is the world coming to? I can't believe it. So this mod, apparently, when you you download it and apply it or whatever to your game, you unlock some scene where you're actually able to have sex with people and watch the whole thing in the game.
Well,
have you
play guys the whole thing.
Play the whole thing.
Over
well,
and over.
Over and.
I mean, allegedly.
Allegedly, I of course would never do such a thing. And I'm sure neither of you would either. Brad, what's the world coming to?
I don't know. I'm just aghast. I mean, sure, I was, shooting hookers and having sex with them to get my health points back and then, killing people to take their cars. But now, sex in games? I don't know. Won't someone please think of the children? Thank God that they changed the rating on it from what was it before at M
M O
yeah
no,
so
M-A?
17
mature?
Year olds or before
right.
And now only 18 year olds and above, so that extra year, I applaud them for taking that tough stand.
Right, exactly. Now
I think I'm going to end up having to be the conservative then, because I'm going to have to take issue with this. This is going to break out neatly, because Brad is going to be sort of the left wing, and I'll be the right wing. Or
wait, 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 wait. Well, I was spent 6 months in your gulag not that long ago. You're the left wing, I'm the right winger.
Well, because I'm actually going to come out on the side of basically the ESRB on this issue, because I think, first of all, I think it's a little bit misleading to say the uproar is over the mod. Because the mod Hot Coffee simply unlocks something that Rockstar, the creator, had already put in the game and had sort of stealthed past the ESRB. The ESRB's job is to rate the content, and it's the developer's responsibility to portray that content accurately.
That
so I think
true.
The uproar isn't over a mod that unlocks it. The uproar is over the fact that Rockstar didn't present this to the ESRB, and they sort of disingenuously portrayed their game one way, and there was something else in there that they hid.
They hid from the reviewers. And that is actually an excellent point. Now, it's my understanding that Rockstar and maybe other game developers are claiming that there's often material that ships that's kind of just left on the disc that's not supposed to be accessible, but sometimes it is. What do you know about
well,
that?
Well, that's the thing. There's it is a mod. You do have to download a thing to do it. I mean, if I like our games, we allow people to go and mod them all the time. If someone goes and does things that allows pornographic content on there, does that mean we're responsible for that? The game out of the box, as you play it unmodified, does not have this stuff in there, unfortunately. Which I mean, I for one am glad that it is in there, because did you know, for example, that there is a position where the woman is on top. I mean, in sex, woman on top. I mean, who would have ever thought of this?
Well,
the game should be being, we should be thanking Rockstar for doing this, because it's now an educational title.
Well, nice try, Brad, actually. But I see the point that it's not so much like, for example, if we, you know, wanted to ship a video game. You know, it was just like Space Battles or something like that. And then there ended up being pornographic material that was already on the disc that people could suddenly access. It seems that that is more of a problem than somebody just applying, you know, new content to the game on their own. And that's kind of your point there, Tom, right? It's
right. The point is, like, Brad's
on the disc. Right.
Exactly. Brad's analogy is a little bit fallacious because there was no, if you ship Galactic Civilizations 2 and someone makes a mod where all the spaceships are penises, that's something that they've done. That's out of your control. But if you ship it with a version where all the spaceships are penises and someone discovers that in there, you're responsible for having put it in there in the first place, regardless of how it was discovered, how difficult it is to access. It's a matter of accountability. Who's responsible for what gets shipped? And Rockstar is responsible. If this was indeed a little bit of leftover code that they were just sloppy with, which I personally find hard to believe, then they're not as culpable, they're still responsible. But if this was something that they wanted to stealth out there and then later, a few months down the road, release the cheat codes so that people could find this, which is a more likely explanation, then they deserve every blow that they're going to take to the wrist, every fine that's levied against them by the FTC now that it's become a bigger investigation. I personally think it's very fashionable for us gamers to sort of be up in arms that games are going to be censored and that, you know, we can't have nudity in games. We can. We just have to be accountable for that. And we have to let the ESRB do its job, and we have to let them... They need respect, and this is a situation where Rockstar didn't respect them, and they're going to have to pay the price. And I fully support that.
However, we're talking about a game where you can kill people and...
Yeah, well, that's my point, is that I guess my issue is that obviously it's bad that they had this stuff in there. No doubt about that. But the... It's just kind of ironic. We're talking about a game in which you kill and maim and murder in the most graphical sense, and that's okay. but we throw sex in it, and suddenly it's over the top because they re-rated it as being an adult-only game, and it's like, well, now it's an adult-only game, but graphically, this is more than just like I know the old argument about movies, about sex in movies versus people shooting, but Grand Theft Auto was very graphic in the way you kill people, and you know, yet that's apparently okay compared.
Well, you know, I got to say, Brad, I think you're buying a little bit into this sort of mainstream misrepresentation of what Grand Theft Auto is.
I love the game too. I've been playing it over and over. I mean, you might even say I've been spending hours alone with it. researching.
But one of the dirty little secrets about Grand Theft Auto is that it's in a way it's a game that teaches this odd sense of family values and obligations to the people you're closest to and cleaning up your neighborhood and going straight and going from being a sort of a small-time thug to a business owner. And yeah, there's a lot of violence in it, but I think Grand Theft Auto, the storyline in the game, it is very, in a way, it's not sort of just mindless violence. You're cleaning up crack dens. There's even an early plot line where you're sort of promoting racial tolerance between a black and Hispanic couple.
Sure, but we are talking about a game whose title is Grand Theft Auto.
Right, exactly. It's about crime, and it's about, I think what Grand Theft Auto is and what gets people, what gets its bad rap, is that it creates this sense of freedom. And it brings out the worst in people. If you set somebody loose in a virtual city where there's pedestrians and cars you can steal, they'll steal the cars and they'll run over the pedestrians. But that's what happens. If you create this vivid and rich and living of a world, people will do terrible things in it. And is that the responsibility of the people doing the things or of the developer for giving you freedom? And when the developer does sort of guide you through a storyline, I think Grand Theft Auto has some very good, responsible things to say.
Well, I agree, and maybe my analogy may be a little fallacious, but the game, come on, it the game has fellatio in it.
Right.
I mean,
right.
We need to cut. You know, I'm just saying that. Let's not be too harsh on it. I mean, maybe it's a whole new world of game distribution in the sense that providing I guess I have nothing more to add. I just wanted to
say that word. Nice.
You just wanted to get in that word, didn't you?
I did.
Okay. Well, I do think it is a little bit disturbing that it seems that violence is okay and sex is not. I realize that, you know, kids are exposed to violence maybe more often than sex. I don't really know what the statistics are currently. And if we're going to say it's an adult-only game, then that's all. That's probably fine, you know, we want to make sure that it's an adult-only game. But what really is the difference between 17 and 18 in terms
Right. You know, I mean, I totally agree. That seems a little bit ridiculous, but I do agree that there need to be different ratings, and sex is different from violence. Violence is a part of how children play, especially boys. Sexual activity, though, is something that I think you have to be careful about how and in what context children discover that. And I think that's something, there's a reason that sex and violence are treated differently. You drop a piano on Roadrunner, that's something that kids see at age eight, and that's something, you know, boys shooting each other with sticks that are guns, that's just how boys play with each other, and that's a part of their development from a very early age. Sexuality is something very different, and I think should be handled a little differently.
And the conjunction of sex and violence is actually, you know, can be more disturbing to the developing mind than either of those individually.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I mean, and certainly, I mean, Grand Theft Auto is taking quite a... Rockstar's taking quite a beating for this, and it does send a wake-up call to game developers. I know that we're going to be, when we go in to submit our stuff to the SRB next time, I mean, our last game got rated T for teen because we talked about NAMBLA in there.
Political Machine?
Yeah.
NAMBLA. Wow.
Yeah, you could go on the O'Reilly Factor and talk about, and he'd bring up NAMBLA. You know, potentially,
Mommy, what's NAMBLA? Yeah, that could be tricky.
Yeah.
It is tricky, yeah.
It won't be.
Well, you know,
sequel.
Pirates, they took out trade, among the trade goods was tobacco in an earlier version of it, and they took that out because it was affecting their rating, which, again, that strikes me as a little silly. And some of these distinctions are absolutely arbitrary, and you're right.
I wonder
the whole
how much the rating actually affects the sales. I mean, have they done any studies?
I can kind of tell you right now, I was just on eBay looking for a copy of GTA. And the only one that actually said, you know, Grand Theft Auto with Hot Coffee mod was actually on sale, was at $41 at the time I looked at it. So, you know,
there you go. It affects sales in a positive way.
Exactly. There is the theory that no advertising is bad advertising, so maybe Rockstar will come out on top in all of this.
Ultimately, yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Kristen, by the way. I mean, Rockstar is going to – this is in a way, a wonderful boon for them, and they thrive on this sort of mainstream attention, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they're going to have to pay fines, and I'm sure it's a huge pain in the butt for them to have to issue the stickers and the recall, but I don't think they're going to go out of business anytime soon.
Right. Well, excellent, you guys. This has been a great conversation, and I really appreciate you both for joining us. Thank you, Brad and Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. This podcast has been brought to you by neowin.net and wincustomize.com. Find us on the internet at poweruser.tv. In this segment, we're discussing Internet Explorer 7, which is currently in developer beta, which is a private beta. Joining me are Chris Quillis, Vice President of Development at Stardock Corporation, and Paul Krebs, who is a NeoWin news editor. Of course, I do know that power users can get passionately involved in their computers and software, so first are the ground rules, guys. No cursing, no kicking, no pinching, no biting, no personal attacks. Can you dig that, Chris?
How many languages can you swear in?
Well, I think if we just avoid swearing in English, we might be okay.
I'll see what I can do.
Okay, how about
I'm
you,
I'm cool with that, too,
all right,
Kristen.
Good. Excellent. So Internet Explorer 7 is currently, as I said, in developer beta, meaning people like yourselves who are power users or developers or people who are kind of in the know are allowed to take a look at it and, you know, see what's going on with it. They've got three different areas that they're trying to focus on improving for this build of Internet Explorer. And the first one is security, which they are referring to as dynamic security protection. They're trying to help us not get all kinds of spyware and malware and, you know, helping us avoid those phishing scams, which I hate so very, very much. Chris, what is your current take on this build? Of course, we want to, you know, acknowledge that it is a beta, but what is your take on the security protection improvements in Internet Explorer in this particular build?
I think that after years of neglecting Internet Explorer, Microsoft has made a concerted effort to refocus on the underpinnings and to really recognize that Internet Explorer and websites in general are a vector for attack these days.
Right.
By having their developers go back and really go through the code base and try and, from the ground up, provide more security inside Internet Explorer, not mm-hmm. only on the forthcoming Windows Vista, but for, you know, the hundreds of millions of people who are using XP. I think they've gotten a new base to build on in terms of features going forward that are more visible to the end user.
Right. And, you know, of course, security has been an issue for a long time, but, you know, better late than never, right? Better than not having any security at all.
That depends on when it's going to be released. We still don't really have a roadmap in terms of where Internet Explorer 7 is going to go. We can assume that there's going to be a Beta 2, you know, mm-hmm. maybe a Beta 3, then right. some release candidates. Right. And sometime in the next year, we'll see this as shipping code.
Right. And by that time, who knows if it's even going to be effective anymore at that point because the technology changes so fast, which is, of course, ever the problem with software developers. The technology changes so fast, and it's hard to keep up with it all. Paul, how do you feel about the new security protection features? You just wrote a review on neowin.net, did you not?
Yeah, I did. That's right. And there seems to be a lot of interest in it, too. We posted it about noon today, I think, mm-hmm. and there's already about 25,000 people that have taken a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So it does seem to be a hot topic. With security, it's a long time coming. I mean, like, Microsoft really hasn't refreshed their browser since, mm-hmm. like, Internet Explorer 6. And even with the improvements they did in SP2, they're still way behind the ball, or were way behind the ball until this point when they released Beta 1.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one, they've included anti-phishing stuff. There's an anti-phishing wizard, and what they're going to be doing is building on top of the Microsoft anti-spyware tool that they released a while back.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be using a similar database to that, and people will be able to report websites that appear to be malicious or that the phishing filter saw as malicious. And they'll be able to record that, and if other people run into the same site, they'll be able to go back and look and say, okay, well, this person or this number of people have experienced the problem on the site, so it'll mm-hmm. be flagged. Another thing they did for security, anyways, is the whole pop-up routine in ActiveX, supposedly they're tightening that up. They're not including anything different with pop-up blocking. They're going to leave that to toolbars and third-party applications like they did with IE6.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the stuff, yeah, it's a long time coming.
Right. Well, better late than never sometimes, but then again, you know, the people out there who are creating these scams move so fast that by the time they release Internet Explorer 7, it's possible that they'll have found another way around it. So
individually. That's just it. Yeah. We had Firefox and Opera that have been working on their mainstream browsers for mm-hmm. Several years now, especially Firefox. They've just really been leading the way with anti-spyware stuff. Like, I know Brad Wardell was talking to me the other day, and he was saying that he really hasn't gotten any spyware or malware on his computer since he switched over to Firefox.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, yeah.
And I mean, the opportunity is there for Firefox, and to a lesser extent Opera, to continue to expand their market share, certainly in the realm of the power users. Because let's remember, once Internet Explorer 7 is actually released, you know, you still have to wind up getting it. And it's not going to be on your mom's home PC probably anytime soon.
Well, my mom's home PC is another issue entirely. She's not what you'd call a power user, but that's another story for another day, right? The next topic, or rather feature, I guess, in Internet Explorer is end-user features. They're trying to do some things like better navigation through tabbed browsing and shrink-to-fit web page printing, which is actually a nice thing to have when you're trying to print out a web page. It doesn't, you know, go off into never-never land off the sides of the page. Paul, we'll start with you on that one. How are they coming along with their new features?
Well, what they're really trying to do with IE7, mm-hmm. right off the bat, you'll notice when you boot it up, if you have it installed on your system, they've really redone the entire layout of the browser. The file menus have been moved down. Mm-hmm. The control set has been moved down, like your home and your favorites button.
Mm-hmm.
And they've really redone the top as well, with the tabs being in the middle now, and you have the back and forward buttons. And they created a new hybrid stop/refresh button that by default sits to the right of the address bar there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really trying to improve it. What I find, too, I reflected that in the review, was they really have a lot of the stuff backwards. Like, I mean, the tabs are sitting in the middle, the file menu's on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at any other browser that's out there now, be it Firefox, Opera, there's a standard. There's a de facto standard that's been created.
Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft seems to be going against this. Whether or not it's going to change, we'll see in the PDC refresh, or we'll see in the Beta 2 refresh. But as it looks right now, I'm kind of disappointed with the way the interface looks, especially because you can't customize it to the way other browsers look like. So.
Right. Although, you know, to put in a word for Microsoft, I would say that their audience is not necessarily power users, but people who are used to seeing the same thing. So they're probably, you know, in a tough place in terms of trying to redesign it. If they make it look completely different, people get, you know, people who are not used to seeing changes like that might get a little bit
well that's crazed just it. Firefox has taken 10% of the browser share in a matter of years, and now Microsoft is going back to the drawing board and saying, well, look what they did and all the features that they've included with Firefox.
Right.
And they're saying, well, we have to do something. We have to give them tabs. We have to give them the customizability and all that to go through. So,
but it's not clear, I think, certainly in terms of running this on XP, that this UI convention is the way to go. And hopefully they're going to get enough feedback from the developers and the other people who are testing it at this early stage that they get a chance to go back and revisit this. A lot of this UI stuff, these new conventions, you're also seeing in the Windows Vista build.
Mm-hmm.
And to what extent they're going to be kept, as opposed to, you know, the years that we've had to become accustomed to the standard UI conventions to train people on how, what, where, and why things work. You know, some of that's been tossed over the side of the board here. So it'll be interesting to see what revisions they make in the coming months.
Okay. And Chris, any other words on end user features that they're being being implemented in this new?
Well, frankly, I'm thrilled that whenever I try and print something, it's not going to wind up with half the characters tossed off into Never Never Land. I always figured someday I'd find them with my lost pencils and mismatched socks.
Right.
The tabbed browsing is adequate, I guess is the best term for it in this release.
Mm-hmm.
One of the new things that I'm particularly keen on in terms of broadening the market for this sort of things is the RSS discovery for various internet feeds that you can it will scan the web page you're on and indicate if there's an RSS feed that you can subscribe to for that page so that you can keep track of updates there in the future. And there's a lot to be said for something that goes out and aggregates that content for you being in the base OS. Though I'm sure all of the other RSS aggregators and browsers will continue to innovate and build on top of that.
Well, definitely. If there's one thing I could highlight, too, as being the best feature of this beta, it's the way they did RSS. I mean, it's really amazing. You click on the feed button and on all your stuff's there. I know Firefox and Opera and all of them, they have the same thing, but just the way the content is laid out on their pages is very nice. And eventually the feeds, it won't only be RSS, it'll also be Atom feeds, too. So users really have a lot of choices with that.
Well, that's terrific. And, of course, we're very concerned with having good RSS feeds, being a podcast and all. So that's good news for us. Web development standards. They are trying to include some improved support for cascading style sheets, as well as transparent PNG support. What else is going on there, Chris? What can you tell us about what they're improving in that area?
Well, this is kind of Microsoft's kind of screwed no matter what they do here. For years, they've more or less maintained that they didn't necessarily have to go back and update these things, that Internet Explorer would not be updated as a browser, that it was part of the OS, and only with new revisions of the OS would you see updates. They've gone back on that, obviously, over the course of the last year with regards to the IE7 development. And indeed, they've gone through and started fixing some of the bugs that have plagued web developers for years, including adding transparent PNG support, which is, only about 6-7 years overdue.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fine and dandy for the web developers, but you're never going to make them totally happy because whatever standards are out there that other browsers claim to support, you know, Microsoft generally tends to pick and choose which one of those that they'll actually be totally on board with.
Mm, I see.
Yeah, to be fair to Microsoft, though, on their IE blog, they did post that their intent was to build a platform that does eventually comply with web standards. And they highlighted CSS 2 and 2.1 once it's been recommended. But we do have to throw Microsoft some slack here. I mean, this is their first attempt at a browser in a long time, and a lot of stuff has changed. Mm-hmm. But don't expect full CSS2 support in IE7, not by any means. So.
Right. But it is getting better, at least. So
they're trying. That's what I said. In the review, they're trying. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And they've got some time to work at this, too. I mean, this is an early build that's, you know, like they say on the page, it's really intended for developers. This is
right.
not something that you're going to run out and put on your home PC, or
right,
it's
right.
certainly not on your mom's PC quite yet.
Right.
But give them time to get the stuff baked in and to sort out the details.
Right. And, of course, the whole purpose of a beta like this is to get that kind of feedback from developers and find out what's needed and what's working and what's not, right? So hopefully we'll see some, you know, some good improvements from this beta to the final version, I imagine. Any final thoughts, Chris?
No, I'm good for now.
Okay, cool. Paul, anything else you want to add?
Just generally, people should have an open mind when they come to this. It's beta 1. We
yeah.
highlighted that. It's only a look at things to come. You can expect the final release of IE7 to be sometime in really late 2005, early 2006. But because the development is so closely tied to Vista, like you'll notice, IE7 Beta 1 is build 5.1.1.2.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the exact same as Vista Beta 1.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd probably guess sometime early 2006 you'll see the final.
Okay, great. That's good to know. Well, thank you both, Paul Krebs from NeoWin.net and Chris Quillis of Stardock, for joining us. And thanks for joining us, everyone who's listening in. Check out Paul's review of IE7 at www.neowin.net. It'll be up on the main page as of the time of this recording, or it will be archived in the reviews section. Welcome to the Power User Podcast, where we discuss topics of interest to tech power users. I'm your host, Kristen Hatcher, and this show is brought to you by NeoWin.net and WinCustomize.com. Recently, IBM announced that it's officially discontinuing support of its OS2 operating system. The last version of the operating system was out in 1996, but now IBM is officially killing it off. They're done with it. Joining me today is regular contributor Brad Wardell of Stardock Corporation, who, at the height of OS2, was a developer of software for that operating system. And Chris Quillis, who now works at Stardock, but was previously the keeper of the definitive guide to what was happening in the next version of OS2. It was called the unofficial IBM OS2 Beta FAQ. That would be FAQ, of course. So, how are you guys doing today?
Oh, not too bad, considering that IBM killed OS2.
I was brought here under false pretenses. I was told that we were going to be talking about a new version of OS2 with an integrated compositor, voice recognition, and all sorts of other things.
Well, I'm afraid that is not, in fact, the case, Chris. It's dead. It's gone.
No, I can't. You know, they've been saying OS2 is dead for at least 30 years.
Right. It does seem that way. It's been a long time coming. So, last version out in 1996, so surely this is not a surprise to either one of you.
No, I mean, you know, the press had been claiming OS2 was going to die since long before 96.
Right.
And I guess if you keep making the prediction long enough, eventually you'll be true. It's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, they say stopped clock is right twice a day, but I've got all digital clocks now, so I really wouldn't know.
Yes. You know, it's kind of funny, though, that it's not OS2 advocates that should be noticing what happened to OS2. It's Linux advocates.
Is that right? Why is that?
Well, a lot of people say, well, you know, if they keep improving Linux on a desktop, it'll eventually overcome Windows. And I was like, are you got to be kidding? In 1992, when OS2 2.0 came out, it could run DOS, Windows, and OS2 programs, multitask them together in a crash-proof environment, or largely crash-proof environment. It ran reasonably well on 8 megabytes of RAM. It ran poorly on 4, but it could run on 4 megs of RAM. And it had an object-oriented interface. It was light years beyond what was out there to competition, Windows 3.0. And Windows 3.0 crashed like crazy, and yet you could run those same programs on OS2. And even despite those advantages, even though that it took Microsoft 3 more years before they came out with Windows 95, which was still not really ready for prime time, OS2 still lost with the backing of IBM.
Hmm. So what's the difference? Why was it just marketing? Did Microsoft have better
Microsoft
more
was
caffeine?
Much better at marketing, know. And they mm-hmm. won where it counted. They got OEMs to preload Windows, and IBM could not get OEMs to do it because IBM was making hardware too. And, you know, who wants to – how do you go to your competitor and talk them into – you know, go to Dell or HP and talk them into putting on your operating system when you just had – just got done spending half a decade trying to kill these clone makers?
It also didn't help that IBM couldn't manage to get a consistent, specific message across. It took them years to build up their relationships with, you know, system builders and people who actually went and would be selling this and offering it to customers. Because if you're some little VAR who's, you know, supporting your local businesses and you have no idea what this OS2 thing is and you can't get an IBM system engineer on the phone at your beck and call, you know, how are you supposed to be able to continue to push that product for them?
Hmm. So they just really didn't seem to have a handle on how to push themselves out there, at least as far as operating systems are concerned. Maybe they felt that the IBM name would carry it.
Well, they weren't. IBM never got used to the consumer market. And it's hard to believe that after when DOS was dying out in its DOS 5.0 days back in the early 90s, that there were two visions for where the operating system should go. You had one from Microsoft, which was called Windows, and one from IBM called OS2. And most people just think it was a smooth transition into OS2, but instead we had a Betamax versus VHS type war, and IBM could just not communicate effectively to beyond its corporate client base that, hey, this thing will run all of your DOS, Windows, and OS2 programs. You could even run your DOS games under OS2 back when it came out, which was ironic because in Windows you actually had to exit out of Windows back to plain DOS to run your game.
For a while they tried to make that a feature.
Yeah.
Right. So it's my understanding there's people out there still running OS2 and still trying to hang on to it, but now they have no more support from IBM. It's officially
Well, they haven't really had any support for many years.
Is that right?
If you think about where operating systems were in 1996, I mean, OS2's font support is just atrocious. And we take, you know, in Windows XP, you have, ClearType, which does sub-pixel alpha blending. OS2 fonts don't even have regular anti-aliasing on them. And, I mean, so it looks just hideous.
That's
there's also no 3D support for, mm-hmm. you know, hardware-accelerated 3D support. And, of course, device support was always a problem, but... You know, we all lose when something like OS2 fails because there was a lot of innovative ideas in OS2 that the most innovative time in operating system development was when OS2 and Windows were competing neck and neck. I mean, we had Windows 95 and Windows NT 4.0 came out in 96.
Mm-hmm.
And OS2 4 came out in 1996. If you took a version of Windows NT 4.0 and compared it to Windows XP, the difference... In 10 years, here we are almost in 2006, it's pretty modest compared to where operating systems were in 1996 with Windows NT and where they were in 1990 when everyone's running around with DOS. I mean, operating system innovation pretty much came to a standstill after OS2 faded away.
And, of course, competition does drive the marketplace, but we don't get the same competition between, for example, Apple and Microsoft. They're just, I mean, as much as everyone would like to assume they're competing with each other, the truth is Microsoft has rather a significantly larger market share than Apple does, so the competition isn't quite as...
And to be perfectly honest, I know that Mac users are going to, they always scream when everyone criticizes their operating system, but I mean, I've spent a lot of time with... Mac OS and System 6, and you know, even before, the Mac OS was a piece of crap up until Mac OS 10, which was a pig when it first came out, and they've slowly made it better. But I mean, other than having good usability options, the Mac operating system was never that, in my opinion, very good. It didn't even have preemptive multitasking. That is, programs couldn't do things at the same time. They had to work cooperatively up until just a few years ago. So they didn't have memory protection until the late... I mean, in my opinion, Windows NT... In 1996, there were only two good consumer operating systems, and that was NT 4.0 and OS 2. So that, I don't think the Mac has ever been
a real
competitor from
in
a
terms of pushing forward the technology.
Exactly.
Right.
Technically, you also had BOS and Next around at that time, which were great, but nowhere near the level for being able to be available for a consumer. And I mean, you saw what Apple did with that. They looked at them both and they decided to go buy back Steve Jobs into the fold.
Yeah, I still maintain that BOS would have been a better option. I mean, it was a new, very sophisticated operating system, but that's for another time.
So the, you know, we kind of are calling it the death of OS 2, but the truth is, you know, it hasn't been around for a long time. So what is this official announcement from IBM? What's the impact of that on the marketplace right now? I'm assuming it's basically
the impact is pretty much negligible right now. What it means for IBM is IBM has officially stamped a line in the sand that says, after this date, unless you are actively paying us for support, and let's face it, at this point, nobody really knows, but there's probably less than 20 or 30 really large customers that IBM still has on OS 2 that actively require little things once in a while. It's not going to cause anybody to have to run out and stock up on copies, you know, so that they can live out a nuclear winter.
right.
But the companies IBM has identified, the companies that will still have needs and will continue to work with them and support them as long as they need to.
Okay, well, great information. Thank you both for joining me, Brad and Chris. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. This has been the Power User Podcast with your host, Kristen Hatcher, and it's been brought to you by neowin.net and wincustomize.com. Look for us every week at www.poweruser.tv.